Hey, Cam, mind sending me over our new Wi-Fi password?
Oh, sorry, Mitch, you can't be trusted.
What?
It's your phone. It's different than mine.
Cam! And I thought I was a judgy one.
No, it's just messages between different devices aren't encrypted.
Okay. Since when do you know about encryption?
I know what encryption is, and it's because I'm the last line of defense against any would-be Wi-Fi thieves.
Cam, come on.
Okay, fine. I'll send it somewhere more private.
Thank you.
Safely send messages between different devices. On WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone.
Introducing the new Starbucks Pairings menu, where you can get a tall brewed coffee or tea, hot or iced, paired with a croissant starting at $5, or with a breakfast sandwich starting at $6. Because at Starbucks, we know that some things are better together. Limited time offer at participating stores. Restrictions apply. Visit starbucks.com/pairings to learn more.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, back for another week and back to discuss two of the main competitions in world football taking place simultaneously on opposite sides of the Atlantic Ocean. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, we've got summer arrived, hasn't it, in England? So that's been nice. It's quite hot right now, but I'm not going to complain at all because I've been waiting for this for weeks.
I'm sticky. It's probably how
it's sticky today.
It's sticky out. But you know, as you say, can't complain. I'm off to Glastonbury tomorrow.
Underprepared, you say?
I am deeply, woefully underprepared. Spending a week in Germany at the Euros 3 days before you have to go to Glastonbury is not ideal preparation, but it is what it is. I've had a wonderful time. I'm not complaining. So I'm just enjoying these 2 weeks of
We've got a good knife. I like it. Nice
good,
life, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good. I can't complain. So I'm very, very excited. But before we go anywhere, before I pop off to see some music, we are going to talk about the Euros and the Coppa. We've picked out three big questions from either competition that we're going to address on today's episode. What do you reckon? Should we start Coppa? Should we start Euros?
Honestly, I'm really interested to hear about the Coppa, but I think that right now the Euros is probably the place to start because it's more feels more alive right now. I think it's what the people would want.
Okay, all right. Well, we are slaves to the people. That's how it rolls. So yes, we will start with the Euros. And my first question is basically, are Spain the real deal? Now, there was a lot of talk about Spain in the build-up to this Euros. Obviously, they won the Nations League last year, and that was their first piece of silverware since that iconic era from 2008 to 2012 where they won Euros, World Cup, Euros back-to-back and were completely and utterly the dominant international force in world football, I think. So when you kind of look at where they are and where they've been since then. There's been a lot of kind of moments of brilliance from Spain, but nothing cohesive is probably how I would put an argument together. And Luis de la Fuente took over from Luis Enrique at the end of the last World Cup, and he's been in charge through a turbulent time in Spanish football. And there have been some pretty weird moments for him, notably around his relationship with Rubiales and how that's kind of panned out and the RFEF's kind of restructure that's looked around it. But I think we got to the start of this Euros and no one was completely sure what we were going to get from this Spain side. There is an undoubted quality of talent across this squad. And man for man, you know, it's up there with France and England in terms of a quality of player and caliber of the squad as a whole. But I think that for my money, Spain have been the most cohesive and the most impressive side at this Euro so far. Now, last night we watched them play against Albania. They made 10 changes. They basically played the B team. Aymeric Laporte was the only player to keep his place from the win over Italy. And it wasn't all smooth sailing, but it was relatively comfortable in terms of them maintaining their 100% record at the competition, winning the group with 9 points, and going through the group stages without conceding a goal. And what I've seen from Spain, I think there were question marks after that first game. A lot of people will point to the 3-0 win over Croatia and be like, that's got to be the standout result so far. I don't think it was a standout performance. I think the Italy game, where they were so dominant for all but maybe 10 minutes of that game, was the one where you sat up and took notice of Spain. Because the Croatia game was a little bit end-to-end. Croatia were incredibly wasteful. We'll talk a bit more about them in a minute. But Spain were lethal in front of goal, and their ability to create space and make things work in the box and those combinations that they had going through the midfield and out into the wide areas was absolutely glorious. And I've just got this feeling, look, you can't ever predict in terms of being like, this team will win the Euros. France were probably the best team at the last Euros, and they were cruising in that game against Switzerland, and suddenly they were out. So anything can happen. And I'm not saying that Spain are 100% going to win this competition. But for my money, they are the standout team. They have been the most obviously cohesive unit so far. The camp looks really settled and happy. One of the things that De La Fuente has done really, really well, I think, since taking over, is kind of eliminating toxicity from that camp. Any players that had a problem with each other, any players that felt they were bigger than the team as a whole, have mostly been taken out. I think you look at the makeup of this squad and the fact that the team that's most represented within it is Real Sociedad is probably something worth noting at this point. And then Athletic Club have a couple. Obviously, Barcelona have a couple. There's a few Real Madrid boys in there. But the makeup is not the old Spain squads of just being like everybody plays for Real Madrid or Barcelona. This is a very varied, wide squad. It has a lot of different skill sets within it. And the balance of it has looked so, so good so far. So, yeah. Are Spain the real deal is the question.
Yeah, well, they're a bit more like a club team, aren't they? That's probably what I like about them. And they seem to be in the right space for a tournament of this size because expectations weren't through the roof, but the potential was. And we weren't sure what we would get from them coming to the tournament. But I think I said, if not on ranks, then elsewhere when I was previewing the Euros, that Spain were about as underdoggy as I could imagine it coming to somebody winning a tournament. You can never really consider Spain to be underdogs, but considering everyone was saying, well, it'll be England or Germany or France or Portugal, then you have to say Spain are underdogs because nobody was really tipping them to go and win it. And I don't know that I'm necessarily expecting them to win it now because it's reasonably rare that the team that bursts out of the blocks can maintain that throughout the tournament unless they are quite obviously the best team.
Well, there is one thing to note on that. The last time that Spain, and the only time that Spain won all three games in the group stages was 2008. Went on to dominate the tournament.
One of the best teams we've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this one isn't. So like, if France had come out the blocks like this, if England had come out the blocks like this, I would be purring. Oh my God, this is it. Football's coming home. But You know, I just don't want to get carried away. I love watching this team. I even love their kit, all right? They look good in every sense. Yeah. Every sense, they look good. But I just want to enjoy this. They've got a nice last 16 set up. They're obviously waiting on that right now, but don't they play a best of...
They'll play a third place.
A third best, which is obviously great, probably, unless someone drops down that's unexpected. But yeah, this is... If you're looking for a feel-good factor, Spain's about as good as it gets right now.
I like the build of this squad, and I like that the players in it seem to be really happy to be within it. And I think you can see that from the performances. Look, Cucurella's had a better season, I think, at Chelsea in the second half of the season than maybe people were expecting from him. But what he's brought down that left-hand side, being picked ahead of Alex Grimaldo, was the season of his life, right? Yeah. By Leverkusen. He's brought that intensity and that fizz down Spain's left-hand side. And the link-up with Nico Williams in there, I think, has been really, really nice. Carvajal, with that experience down the right, being able to cover for maybe some of the, not flaws, because that would do a disservice, but maybe some of the kind of youthful ignorance of Lamine Yamal's game defensively at times. Just being able to make sure he's doing all the things he needs to do. And then, look, he plays like a 21-year-old already. But, you know, Carvajal's there just to steer him in the right direction. The balance of the midfield, they have the best holding midfielder in the world in Rodri. Pedri's come back in there, taking his spot back from Dani Olmo, who's been a pretty big fixture for De La Fuente across the course of this and has been very, very impressive in his first two games. And Fabian Ruiz is flying. He's not really ever performed that well for Spain until De La Fuente took over. And now you're seeing him in there linking up play. The goal he scored against Croatia was absolutely majestic. But more than that, I think all of it feels like more than the sum of its parts. And you look at players coming off the bench, right? Kostelu obviously got a start in the last game, but when he comes off the bench to make things happen, you know, you can tell how proud he is to be, you know, coming on and making a difference, but also to help guide some of these youngsters through. Same for Ayoze Perez, who we talked about before the squad, and I was like, I'm not sure why he's going. He's been okay for Betis, but he hasn't set the world on fire. When he came on against Italy, he terrorized Di Lorenzo, and he'd already been being spun all game by Nico Williams, and he was probably like, oh, thank God, I get a break now because he's gone off and Ayoze Perez has come on. He did not stop running from the moment he came onto the pitch. And that tenacity, that intensity, and that kind of sense that everyone is pleased to play their part of this squad is what's given me hope that Spain maybe actually are potentially flying a little bit under the radar, but could go and win this whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, typically you are expecting it to be Lamine Yamal and Pedri, Nico Williams that we're going to be talking about throughout this tournament. But because they've had this opportunity to use the depth and you're seeing Ferran Torres and Dani Olmo and these players shine too, it means that when those players get a chance again, the expectations are lifted. But so are those players' expectations of themselves. And they now want the chance to not just be bit part in this tournament, but to be in that 11.
Yeah, I think it's a really nice setup. I think it looks really good and I'm excited to see what Spain can do. Let's go down the Iberian Peninsula and go to Portugal. Because my second question is, do you think that Roberto Martinez has solved the Cristiano Ronaldo conundrum? Now, this isn't just based on one game, although I thought he was incredibly impressive against Turkey. There was a lot of things that sort of got the limelight. One was the square ball for Bruno, obviously, to score. That made him the top assist maker in European Championships history. But I think there was also that kind of sense that when Turkey scored their own goal, there was that turning around and shouting at Joao Cancelo. Those are the two things that took the headlines. But over the course of the game, I thought Cristiano Ronaldo was very, very impressive. Now, you go back to the last World Cup, and there was this sense under Fernando Sanches that everything had to be directly through Cristiano for Portugal to succeed. And then suddenly he drops him for a game. Gonçalo Ramos comes in, scores a hat trick, and everybody is very confused as to what the best look for this Portugal side is. And the fact that Ramos is obviously younger, slightly more mobile, has a higher pressing sense for, you know, the most part, I think kind of made people wonder whether actually Portugal off the ball were better with Cristiano Ronaldo out the side. Now, I spoke to a few Portugal fans before that Turkey game, and I was asking these questions and they were pretty set that the man who has to start is Cristiano. And that's fair enough. He's a legend. He's the highest international goal scorer in men's international football history. He has been the captain and talisman of this Portugal side for quite some time. He was the captain who lifted the trophy when they won 2016. All of the above. But I think there was a growing sense that maybe other players could do a job or be able to offer something different in those roles. And how to get the best out of Cristiano was always going to be the question going into this new tenure under Roberto Martinez. Now, I think what we've seen so far is that in qualifying, he was obviously excellent, but it was a relatively weak qualification group. And there were question marks over whether that would translate onto the bigger stage. Portugal weren't great in their first game against the Czech Republic, but I think they feel like they're growing into this tournament. And I think the way that Ronaldo is starting to link up and bring teammates into play, some of the bits he's doing drifting wide when they're on the ball and not just waiting for crosses to come into him, opening up spaces for others to exploit, feels like maybe something's changed or the dynamic has changed within this Portugal team that is allowing him to be the best version of himself and also allow the rest of this team to be the best version of themselves.
He's grown up, I think, mate. I think he's finally grown up. And he's... There comes a time in life when you just realise what's important. And it's not all about you. It's not all about the glory. It's not the personal glory, anyway. It's about the greater good. And maybe now that he's got a family, maybe now he's been away in Saudi and he's been reflecting a bit more, comes back to a stage like this and the whole world is watching him again, because they haven't been. They've obviously like not been watching the Saudi league, most people. And by all accounts, he has had a really good season, right, at Al Nassr. But this is different and he feels like he's different. He's, you know, you see with that pass on the goal that he's less, probably not less selfish, like all in, but in that moment, It looks good on him to have passed that ball. He's going past people. He's doing all sorts. His confidence seems to be in a really good place. And that makes the world of difference. An angry Ronaldo isn't the best Ronaldo anymore. Once upon a time it was, because he would just absolutely tear you apart. But now, if he gets too angry or frustrated, doesn't take it out in the right way. So Portugal needs to be happy and free-flowing and a little bit carefree, I think. And his role has to be adapted to suit that. And I think everybody, as you say, if the Portuguese fans still say that he's the one that they want to see, then obviously he's the one they're going to see. I kept him in my fantasy team for this very reason. I mean, obviously, as people are listening to this podcast, probably on Wednesday, there's the potential that you're about to go and watch the Portugal game. They're playing against Georgia, 8 p.m. UK time.
Sure, but they've already qualified as group winners, so it kind of doesn't matter, right?
But I think for Ronaldo, this game could matter. And I quite like, you know, a lot of people were taking him out of their fantasy team for this match. And I was like, nah, I don't know. I think that he kind of needs to eat up some chances himself, even if it's just a one like solid Ronaldo goal, just to get him properly going too. But yeah, they look good. I mean, I fancied this team ahead of the tournament and I'm kind of jealous, Jack, to be honest. I was speaking to a friend of mine the other day after watching them and, you know, we'd been talking about how frustrating it was to see an England team just not live up to expectation at that point. Who knows how they got on against Slovenia as people are listening to this. But he texts me, he goes, I'm just really jealous of Portugal. They just pick the best players. And if it's like, oh, we've got too many big names here, they just see that as a good thing. They don't run away from it. They don't find a way to mess that up. They embrace it and then they just get on with it. And I think that's really interesting that they do thrive in a situation where a lot of nations, in terms of the managers and the players, might get a bit overwhelmed by how good they actually are and how good they should be.
Yeah, I mean, there is something in that. I think that there can be a parallel drawn. And look, I don't want to draw everything back to England because I wasn't going to discuss them hugely on today's episode. But there is a sense of being like, when you look at these two sides, they both have an insane amount of attacking quality that they're trying to fit in to an 11 that gets the best out of those players. And so far, on the basis of these two games, I think that what we're seeing is Martinez basically schooling Southgate on how to adapt and how to change. And that's important because Portugal changed shape in their first game. And they've done this throughout qualifying. They've played with Partsley with a three at the back, partly with the four at the back. I didn't think the three at the back worked hugely against the Czechs because when you kind of looked at them trying to match up kind of man for man with the Czech formation, I didn't think that it really allowed Portugal to kind of make those things work in the final thirds. But when they changed that shape against Turkey, and look, Martinez made a really good point that they can change shape within games, right? There are enough players of quality and versatility to be able to shift this in game to be able to adapt to different situations. But I do think that when they did play in this manner against Turkey with a four at the back, with João Cancelo tucking inside a right back, leaving Bernardo Silva wide on the right wing at times to stretch play and then allowing him to drift inside to squeeze it when they needed things, it all felt like the rotations and the off-the-ball movements were going in the right direction. Mm. And I'm not too worried about Portugal's final game against Georgia because they know they're through. Obviously, Rafa Leão will miss this one because he's been booked twice for diving now, which is quite funny in some ways. But generally, when you kind of look at all of it, it feels like Portugal are moving in the right direction. They haven't been exceptional yet, but I think that they are on their way to looking like a really tidy unit again. And Martinez deserves immense credit for that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, Martinez, you know, all eyes were on him. You know, can he mess up another kind of golden generation? And I think that probably motivates him not to do that.
Well, talking of golden generations, you've given me a lovely segue.
Hey.
Because my third question is this the end of some golden generations? Belgium and Croatia in particular. Now, there's a lot of chat about Croatia's heartbreaking exit and the manner of it against Italy. But in truth, for me, they simply didn't look good enough across the course of the three games. They were woeful in front of goal against Spain. They were pretty diabolical all round against Albania. And whilst they did a lot right against Italy, I still thought they were the second best team on the pitch. You are obviously welcome to draw your own conclusions, but I don't think that Croatia were the better side in any of their three games at this Euros. Now, a lot of the chat is about Luka Modric and his journey with Croatia is remarkable, right? They got to the World Cup final in 2018. They got to the semi-final in 2022 and they came third in that tournament. And they got to a Nations League final last year in 2023. Obviously, they didn't lift any of those trophies, but considering the size of Croatia, three medals in 6 years, as Zlatko Dalic continues to point out to everybody, is an absolutely stunning return for this side. And I think that it's, you know, a sense of, have we just reached the end, the kind of golden afterglow of what was an incredibly magical time for Croatia. Now, they're not out, but they're probably out, is probably the way I would put it. Modric will be 40 by the time the World Cup in 2026. And whilst there are exceptions, notably Pepe, who's killing it for Portugal, playing at that age is rare, right? Brozovic is 31 now, and he's playing in Saudi Arabia. Ivan Perisic is 35. He's returned home to play for Hajduk Split. Kramaric is still playing well for Hoffenheim, but he's 33. Domagoj Vida didn't set foot on the pitch in this Euros, but still in the squad, and he's now 35. They were all stalwarts of the side that took Croatia to these ridiculous heights. But it feels like the time for this generation might be up. And it's kind of sad to witness the end of it in that kind of manner. That's not how Luka Modric's, if it is to be, last international appearance at a major tournament should have ended, right? He should have gone out in a blaze of glory. Instead, he's kind of been substituted, having had his moment of glory, been given man of the match, and then seen his side concede a last-minute equaliser that might send them out. And it was pretty heartbreaking watching him do those interviews afterwards. And he said that this isn't the time to discuss retirement, etc. But he plays a bit part role now for Real Madrid. Still a very important role, but not regularly playing 90 minutes. He is in there as a guide and a talisman for the younger generation that are coming through. And I just wonder if we're about to see a massive changing of the guard with Croatia that, look, might reinvigorate this side, might, you know, give it the life it needs. There's some really exciting talent coming through. Martin Batarina, who plays for Dinamo Zagreb, is a wonderful talent. And I'm very excited about seeing him come through. Luka Sucic as well. But on the whole, it just feels like that might have been curtain drawn on a golden era of Croatian football.
Yeah, I have to say at this stage, they're boring me, mate. I'm glad they've gone.
Wow, that was not what I was expecting.
No, I am. Like, I didn't see any point of them getting through to the next round, to be honest. And part of me hopes that they don't go through, I mean, as you say, it's highly unlikely on the points they are, they're going to qualify as the third best, but you absolutely don't deserve to at that point. And I wasn't sure what we'd get from in this tournament. And I think we probably got about the middle-ish ground that we kind of anticipated in the end. It was obviously a bit emotional and devastating, I guess, in terms of the way that Italy got that goal so deep into added time that I'm not sure where it came from. But Italy have got something about them, and I don't think Croatia have. Like, I don't think Italy are a good team. I predicted they could come bottom of this group, and I mean, it wasn't that far away from coming true, to be fair. But they've got that kind of togetherness. They've got a resilience, and they've also got the potential for the spectacular, as we saw there. And so I'd rather see Italy progress in this tournament, as they have, than see a Croatia who kind of go through the levels, they end up getting to a quarter or semi-final, and then it's curtains for them, and then we say goodbye to them. Like, they've been a great team to watch over the last 10 years or whatever. We've seen this lot evolve. And they've, at first, they kind of caught us by surprise, and then we all kind of enjoyed the ride with them. But that has ended now, and I think that this was proof that it's over.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it takes us on to Belgium, who are in a relatively similar predicament. I think it feels pretty similar to the last of their golden generation. Look, Belgium may yet qualify for the round of 16, but already, even with that win over Armenia, I feel like it feels like a far cry from the side who lit things up during the World Cup in 2018. Look, that was 6 years ago, so that's fair enough. But the old guard feels a bit like it's on its last legs here. Now, I think that Belgium have maybe done a slightly better job of integrating the new talent and seeing that kind of mix of youth and experience start to blend in here. Now, I don't think that's necessarily working in this tournament. I'm not saying that Belgium have looked particularly good, but I think that, you know, when the next lads take over, there will be a sense that they've already kind of come through into this team. And you know, there's been a pretty much a renovation at the back. And part of that has looked a little bit edgy at times so far, but they're still relying on the old sources. And look, when I think it was kind of important to note that when Belgium went behind, they went into full kind of give the ball to De Bruyne on the halfway line and load the box mode. And they should, with the attacking talent at their disposal, be able to work a little bit better in those spaces and be able to utilize what they've got. And instead, I think it feels like Belgium are kind of leaning too hard on the old guard rather than letting them use their experience to guide a very talented new crop. And that's what I think is interesting about this Belgium side. What they look like in 2 years' time at the World Cup could be very, very different to this, because it feels like they might be ready for a change in a way that Croatia perhaps are quite not.
Yeah. The difference is I still quite like watching Belgium because I kind of... I'm still expecting something from this so-called golden generation. And they're so close. I feel like they're so close still to actually delivering it. I mean, what's Lukaku got now? 3 disallowed goals.
Yeah, he would be the top scorer after own goal if it wasn't for VAR.
Like, it's a little bit of hard luck on his behalf. Obviously, the tournament started badly for Belgium, a shock defeat. But they did overcome that moment. I guess the problem is, you know, they've gone ahead early against Romania, and then it's taken a route one goal in the 80th minute to kill off the game against a nation which you would expect them to have kind of put that game to bed before that. But we've seen a lot in this tournament that bigger footballing nations are struggling to put to bed games. And England have been criticised, and it's largely probably because they were one of the first teams to play. If England were in one of the latter groups and we'd seen everyone else play first, and then we were last every time, it might have been a bit more accepting to have a draw or a tight win. But now we're starting to realise, oh, okay, like, there aren't many batterings happening at this World Cup. Maybe that opening game as well, when Germany did batter Scotland, maybe that set the wrong tone for everybody else to expect. Because that first weekend, it was goals galore, right? And then from there, things have tightened up a bit. And obviously, it gets a bit more cagey because there's more at stake. But with Belgium, obviously, the last game is against the Ukraine. It's a big match. No point, obviously, talking about it in depth right now. But the difference with Belgium's golden generation is that, one, I still trust them a little bit more to get a job done and make a game exciting. They've also got a crop beneath them that are pretty good in their own right. And, you know, players like Doku are going to be a revelation. So I think that that makes them have a bit of a different edge.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we will leave the Euros there with those three questions for you to have a ponder on. And we're going to head across the Atlantic Ocean after the break and talk three questions from the Copa America. Don't go anywhere.
Rack up the deals on everything summer at Nordstrom Rack and get brands you love up to 60% off. Vince, Kate Spade New York, Steve Madden, Madewell, Nike, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Just in dresses, tops, shorts, sandals, sneakers, denim, luxury bags, and sunglasses. Rack up the deals today and save up to 60% on summer at your Nordstrom Rack store.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Introducing the new Starbucks Pairings menu, where you can get a tall brewed coffee or tea, hot or iced, paired with a croissant starting at $5, or with a breakfast sandwich starting at $6. Because at Starbucks, we know that some things are better together. Limited time offer at participating stores. Restrictions apply. Visit starbucks.com/pairings to learn more.
For 25 years, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Welcome back to Ranks FC Part 2 here, where we're heading to the Copa, and we're going to discuss three questions that have come up from the first round of games over in the United States of America. And the first question is, Dean, do Brazil have the firepower? Now, they were frustrated last night by Costa Rica, ended up drawing 0-0 in their tournament opener. This doesn't tell the full story. Brazil probably should have had two penalties, by my money. They hit the woodwork with an absolutely thunderous effort. There was a couple of different bits and bobs that, you know, ended up scrambling around the penalty box and going over the bar. We had a strike from Lucas Paqueta that curled just wide. They were the better team by a distance in this game, but they were frustrated by Costa Rica, put up a valiant defensive effort, and at the end, you know, felt like they'd earned their point, even if they were the weaker side. Brazil, 1.7 XG in this game. No, single game XG doesn't always tell a full story, but I think it's notable in this regard that, you know, Brazil created the opportunities. My question is, can they finish them? Now, Endrick came off the bench yesterday for Vinicius Jr., which is a talking point in its own right, but this squad is full of very, very talented wide attackers, right? Vinicius, Rodrigo, Rafinha, Savio, Gabriel Martinelli, Pepe from Porto. There are two strikers, if you will, in the squad. Endrick, who is still 17 at this point, and Evan Nilsson, who is still only 24, but has only made one cap for the Brazil national team. And I think some of the frustrations are being felt in the idea that Brazil don't have anyone who regularly sticks the ball in the back of the net. The highest scorer in this squad is Lucas Paqueta, who has 10 international goals. Vinicius has 3 in 30 appearances. Endrick has 3 in 6, which is obviously a bright start, but to lay him in as the kind of you have to score or we're going home kind of person at this age feels a little bit risky at the very least. Rodrigo has 6 in 23, Rafinha has 6 in 23, and Gabriel Martinelli has 2 in 11. It's not loads. And I think the frustrations that built last night, yes, some of them will be caveated by the fact that Brazil were unlucky. Fine. But when you're looking at some of the other attacks and where the goals are coming from in this Copa America, my hunch is that whilst Brazil had a better lead up to this than the 12 months preceding it, is that there is not enough firepower in this team to win the Copa America.
Yeah, I think it's totally valid, of course. I mean, at the moment, you say, can they even get out of the group? I mean,
they'll get out of the group.
They probably will, yeah. But when you consider, I think it's probably helpful they've got Colombia in their third game rather than their next game, to be honest. With Paraguay next, you consider the options that they had to choose from for this game against Costa Rica. I mean, a 0-0 result against Costa Rica is terrible.
Like, it's never going to be good enough for Brazil, right?
That's just
I mean, very, very few results that aren't a win are good enough for Brazil and this fan base because they expect the very best and they've been conditioned to do that. That's fair enough.
Exactly. And you've got such amazing options at your disposal. To not get a tune out of them, obviously it's on the players themselves, but it's also on the manager, isn't it? And I imagine Dorival is coming under some pressure in Brazil right now after a result like that. Rafinha probably was their brightest spark out of the three that started.
Yeah, I thought Rodrigo did okay.
Rodrigo did okay. Vinny, for some reason, just can't spark like he does for Madrid. Massive shout, surely, for Endrick to now come in for the next game. Got, what, 20 minutes here? You just talked about those stats. Talk about Vinny, 3-30, whatever. And you got Endrick, who's got 3-6. Like, go with him. Don't worry about his age. Let him go. Like, I think just let the guy go.
He's good enough, he's old enough, in the words of Mike Bassett.
He is ready. You know he's ready. And this, I think this is a team that is crying out for somebody that just wants to take the game himself. Like, let him just bury chances. Let him fly. Because this team does. They look like duds in front of goal. And obviously they did get the ball in the back of the net here and it was disallowed, but it's just not convincing at the moment. I mean, yeah, like you say they're not going to win the tournament. Yeah, I mean, not even going to come close to winning the tournament at the rate that they played in that match.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard one because obviously Vinicius's form is the thing under scrutiny. And there's some brilliant articles about it today, one in The Guardian and one on The Athletic, where you kind of look at how it's all saying. And The Athletic led with this kind of idea that the camera cut to Neymar when Vinicius was substituted. And he was like, Vinny? Really? But equally, you know, when you're not seeing those sparks that you see for Real Madrid, there are reasons for this, right? And Dorival spoke about it. He said, we tried with Vinny on the wing. We didn't succeed. Then we put him inside and we couldn't find a way through either because he was very well marked. Vinicius has said, every time I play for the national team, I have 3 or 4 players marking me. And that's all true, right?
Yeah.
That's fine. But equally, and you know, when you do play for Real Madrid and you're looking at those kind of setups, there is a slightly different element to it in that you can't really triple mark Vinicius Junior because someone else is going to bury you if you play that way. And it does feel at the moment like they can because there is no one else stepping up to actually make those marks for this Brazil side. And I'm struggling to see what the answer is because I think whilst you might free up a little bit of space by putting Endrick through there and then being like, wow, we've got prodigious 17-year-old talent. We don't want him to score against us is an element. If you can frustrate him out of the game to begin with, can you get him into a point where he doesn't feel like he's even involved? And then we see what his temperament is like. Now, I'm led to believe, and from what I've seen of him, that it's very good and that he'll keep plugging away until he needs to. But it does feel like Brazil kind of need a number 9. And whether that is Evan Nilsson or whether it's Endrick, I think that Dorival has to go with a number 9 for this Paraguay game because Paraguay weren't as defensively solid, I think, as Costa Rica were in their game against Colombia, but they did look more threatening on, you know, in an attacking sense. So we'll find out what the metal of Dorival's defense is at this point. And part of his remit was kind of letting this Brazil side off the leash a little bit, because under Tite, they had one of the best defensive records in world football. They were incredibly hard to beat. And the question mark was over whether that was stagnating their attacking ability. So Dorival's mandate was really to try and unlock some of this attacking talent and get Brazil firing in the final third. We haven't seen that in the first game. Will that impact the defensive kind of options and what that looks like? We don't know, but I think they're set up really interestingly for their second game against Paraguay.
Yeah, it's a tough one because, like, obviously it's only the first game, so there's potentially six games to grow from there. But if in the second game you don't develop from it, then that's when you really start to feel the pressure of the performance. And it's all about the group then. And what is your togetherness like? What is your calmness like? What is the manager like at managing those expectations and kind of blocking it all out and just carrying out the plan that you had in effect rather than panicking and trying to accommodate what the fans want and expect to see? So a new challenge ahead for Brazil.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's move on. And question two of me is just how good are Colombia and Uruguay?
Because, golden generations again, is it?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you'd call this a golden generation for either, if I'm being honest. I think you're kind of looking at two teams that look very cohesive and very together. And for me, okay, Colombia fell off a little bit in the second half, but their first half performance was absolutely scintillating. And Uruguay, I thought, were absolutely brilliant in their opener. They're the two best performances in the Copa for me so far. Mm. And I think what's interesting about that is the fact that, you know, let's start with Uruguay. Well, we never doubted that what a Bielsa Uruguay side was going to look like. Absolutely furious in and out of possession. You know, attacking with players bombing forward, swarming when they don't have the ball. But everything about this was brilliant. And it feels like such a natural mesh for Bielsa to have this Uruguay dogs of war side at his disposal. And what they put together in terms of the three goals, which were pretty brilliant, and Darwin scored a wonderful volley. We obviously saw Araujo score a brilliant goal as well. You said that you preferred that one. But the way that Uruguay put this performance together, the kind of sense of camaraderie around this squad, the talent that's at their disposal and with Bielsa in charge, my kind of thoughts is, are we talking dark horses out here, or are we just talking straight up second favourites for this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously started very strongly. You consider what Brazil put up, and then you look at a Uruguay team that, okay, look, that the opponents aren't particularly difficult, but I would have expected Brazil to do to Costa Rica what Uruguay have done here against Panama, because yeah, they just put it to bed, man. And it's, when I say golden generation, I know it's not like in the typical sense, but like you say, because of Bielsa having this group, that does feel somewhat golden. And it feels like an opportunity. And in the preview, you talked about the fact, I think, that, you know, Uruguay themselves are chasing a record 16th Copa America title. And when you see the team produce a performance like that, it's just fun. It's passionate. I think that's the thing about Uruguay and Colombia. The passion is impossible to ignore. And it's always there, whether the team's dreadful or not. Like, you've got this, like, emotion that is almost second to none attached to it. But when it's good, it's really good. And they can kind of ride that wave. Uruguay are fun.
They burst out of the blocks, man. I think they had nine shots in the first 20 minutes. They were peppering this Panama goal. Now, that's not to say that they were all great shots or well-worked opportunities, because they weren't. But the intensity with which they came out was scary for anyone else. I suppose the only question is, can you maintain that intensity playing every 4 days for seven games? Like, can they produce this kind of performance or a similar kind of performance in the final? I don't know. But with this group of players, I mean, they've got the best shot of anybody, I think.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, they've got a fantastic opportunity ahead of them. They've got a really nice starting lineup, but then they've also got some really nice blend of experience, but also youth and verve that they can bring off of the bench. I really do like this team, I have to say, and I'm excited to see about what they can put up.
Yeah, I mean, look, we go to Colombia from there, and they made it their 9th win on the spin as they beat Paraguay. 24 games unbeaten now. I think it's probably fair to say that they're most informed international side on the planet, right? Oof. Like, there's not many that can hold a candle to that kind of record. So Colombia are flying, and they, again, this first half, I can't explain to you how enthralled I was watching them. It was like everybody was just on sparkling form. Everyone had taken like one of those gold stars in Mario Kart before they came onto the pitch. And everyone was just like buzzing around faster than everybody else, that every pass went well. It was like they were on booster mode on FIFA.
Yeah.
It was truly incredible. And the two deliveries from either side of the pitch from James Rodriguez, who might be playing his football in Brazil now, but is still very much the main man for Colombia. I mean, the first one from the left-hand side is glorious for Daniel Munoz to come on and slam home with a header at the back post. And the second one from a free kick that Jefferson Lerma heads in. I mean, we might call them Colombia Palace at this point because both of those goals coming from the Eagles of Southeast London. And funny enough, Paraguay's goal was scored by a Brighton player, which set up the M23 derby, but in South America, which was fun. But just generally, the way that Luis Diaz was just taking the ball and beating player after player after player, I thought that John Arias was absolutely sensational in terms of the way that he linked up between Luis Diaz and James and the spaces he occupied to just pen Paraguay in. Truly amazing. And just, you know, yes, okay, they dropped off in the second half. And when Paraguay scored, it got a bit nervy and they probably didn't need to put themselves through that. And they thought they'd had a penalty late on. It was disallowed correctly by VAR. But it did feel like that first half performance from Colombia, as long as they don't take their foot off the gas, and maybe they did a little bit too early here, they're going to be a massive challenge for anybody to get past.
They can win the group. Like, they can win this group.
They're already on course to win this group. All they need to do is win their next game and then draw against Brazil, and they've done it.
If they don't, exactly. So that's a really interesting scenario to be in. And they'll probably just go into that last game looking to... You can't obviously play for a draw against Brazil, but they'd have seen the way Brazil started and have every reason to believe that they can go and have a go. I mean, James, when he plays like that, the dummy that he sells on the first goal, the defender is like on a different pitch by the time he's gone for the cross that he thought he was going to be stopping. And then James has gone the other way and delivered an absolute peach into the far post. It's just a lovely performance. Like, everything about it was like set up for them. Like, the stadium was rocking. There was yellow everywhere. It just looked good. And when Colombia look good, they feel good, and there's a proper South America rhythm about them, isn't there? They're a great team to watch, and yeah, they've set a good tone, mate. There's no doubt about that.
What I'm saying is, give me a Colombia-Uruguay final.
Oh,
that's what I'm asking for.
Is it plausible? Have you gone through?
It's plausible if they win the group. Yeah, it's plausible if they win the group. I mean, obviously, someone's going to have to beat Argentina, who are the reigning Copa America and world champions, which is very much easier said than done.
Yeah,
but you know, with the performances these two have put in, I wouldn't write it off as a non-possibility at this point.
Yeah, and look, even the way that Paraguay ended up getting their goal, like, it was a great goal. Like, they've completely had to carve Colombia up. It was a brilliant sequence of passes that opens up the opportunity, and Enciso scores. And I think that in itself is kind of like, it's not like they've been undone on an easy goal. You've properly had to work for that opening to get back into the game and to have the possibility of getting yourselves back into it. But then Colombia, they're like, right, well, let's put our foot down again. Let's go for it again. Let's see if we can get a third. And they did keep pushing on in hope of that. It wasn't like, right, let's do a Gareth Southgate here, shut up shop, and just make sure we don't draw this game. Colombia kept pushing and pushing, almost to their detriment at times, because there was a couple of moments where I thought, hang on, you're going to get caught out on the counter. You've got 6 men ahead of the ball. But yeah, it's just their style, mate, and that's why it's going to be fun to watch.
I'm very, very excited. Very excited about watching both these teams. And look, again, things happen. They could crash and burn, but I think we're going to enjoy watching their games, whatever happens for these two. My final question is something we touched on briefly on Monday on our post box, but I think it's worth raising again, having watched everybody play now. And that question is, should the US be aiming higher? Because I think before this tournament, the kind of par score for the USMNT was to get to the quarterfinals, right? To get out of the group, and whatever happened from then was a bonus, if that was the case. But having seen some of the other performances across this board, and having seen the way that this might end up shaking out, should the USMNT probably be aiming for a deeper run than that? Now, one of our patrons, Justin, basically made the point that he was like, everyone's talking about this being a warm-up for the World Cup. And I think logistically, that is very much the case. But he was saying that the US are probably not going to win the 2026 World Cup, even on home soil, even with, you know, fervent home support, even with the sport growing. The chances of the US winning the 2026 World Cup is relatively small at this point. But the chances of them winning this Copa America, whilst still relatively small, are higher. One, because there's less teams in the competition. And two, because that kind of depth of it feels like there's more opportunities to go in and make a one-off game count. And I thought the US were good against Bolivia. Not, you know, absolutely right home to your mother good, but good enough to impress. And you're looking at this 11 now, and you're seeing 11 players starting for the USMNT who all play in Europe. You're talking players coming off the bench who have that European pedigree as well. And this is not to talk down on MLS, because, you know, I'm a huge fan of the competition. But in terms of where they are competitively and who they're playing against, that is a bonus, I think, for this US side. And when you kind of look at the talent now on show within this side, it does feel like the US should be aiming maybe slightly higher than just getting out of the group. This is a tournament that they should feel that they're in with a shout of winning.
Yeah. Should they? I don't know.
Could they? Yes. Will they? Probably not. But I think that there is an element of being like, I think the narrative around this needs to change.
Yeah,
the US came to the quarterfinals probably shouldn't be par. Semifinals should be par now.
Yeah. I mean, in that sense, yeah. And I mean, they should have higher expectations of themselves. And I would say, I think like some of these players do have high expectations.
Pulisic has talked about winning it.
Yeah, Pulisic always sets a good tone. But Pulisic also has a better mentality than most of his teammates. And look, in America, you're always taught that, it's like Taylor tells me, at school, you are taught America is the greatest nation in the world. You are the best in the world, and you will be the best in the world. And when you watch this USMNT team play, you don't get the impression that all of those players believe that. Maybe quite rightly so, because a few of them aren't. But Pulisic plays with a different urgency and a different purpose to a lot of the team at times. And I think that in his words, you can tell that he genuinely believes that this team can do something special. It's just as everybody else. I think from that opening game, you can see that they are capable of better than what we saw. I think that's clear. I think that scoreline, 2-0, despite the fact that that's what my prediction for the game was, should probably have been 4-0. And this is my problem with the US. I just, as I said on Monday on the Patreon, I don't trust them to finish their chances off. And as soon as they went 1-0 up early for Pulisic, in the next 10, 15 minutes, they had a couple of really good openings. They didn't take them. As soon as they went begging, I was like, do you know what? Do not let it be one of these days. Do not let Bolivia get back into this match. And obviously, Balogun scores at a key time just before the break. And it kind of settles the nerves a bit, and Bolivia don't really come back into it enough. But I do have slight concerns still about whether this team do have the right mentality. I think it's great that they have Panama next, because I think that's another good building block, another good 2-0 win that they can put into place. And then you go into Uruguay with kind of the pressure off a little bit more, and you can, but then you still got to make sure you compete in that match. Like, it's important you don't go and get battered 5-1, like we've seen recently isn't impossible.
Tyler Adams versus Marcelo Bielsa, you love to see it.
But yeah, it's a time for the US to really step up their game. And this isn't about just building up towards the World Cup. This is about making your mark on home soil in a Copa America that is, like, I guess it is there for the taking, in the sense that we just talked about Brazil not hitting the heights they're capable of. Argentina, they've started well, but will they continue that? There's a couple of teams in there like Uruguay and Colombia that are going to be up for this. But certainly semi-finals is plausible. And that would be a fantastic achievement.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's going to be very interesting to see how that one plays out. And with that, we're going to bring to our close our Copa America questions. Another three questions for you to have a ponder on there. We'll keep these updated as we go throughout both tournaments over the next couple of weeks. But that's the end of part two. We'll be back in part three for the return of Guru Wisdom. Don't go anywhere.
Rack up the deals on everything summer at Nordstrom Rack and get brands you love up to 60% off. Vince, Kate Spade New York, Steve Madden, Madewell, Nike, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Just in dresses, tops, shorts, sandals, sneakers, denim, luxury bags, and sunglasses. Rack up the deals today and save up to 60% on summer at your Nordstrom Rack store.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Introducing the new Starbucks Pairings Menu, where you can get a tall brewed coffee or tea, hot or iced, paired with a croissant starting at $5, or with a breakfast sandwich starting at $6. Because at Starbucks, we know that some things are better together. Limited time offer at participating stores. Restrictions apply. Visit starbucks.com/pairings to learn more.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back to Ranks FC, and it's time for...
Guru Wisdom, Guru Wisdom, Guru Wisdom.
Thanks, boys. I haven't heard that in a while.
No, I know. I'll have to play it to them in the car tomorrow, and they'll love this. So, bit of Guru Wisdom. Oh, there's something that's been bugging me this week, Jack. And so this is Guru Wisdom, but it's also a bit of a Guru moan. And the wisdom actually is... So anybody that's over in the US at the moment, don't crack under the pressure to buy tickets for extortionate prices, because this needs to stop. I'm actually starting to become worried about the entry point for the sport in terms of getting kids going to games and watching. The pricing is out of control, and it's really alarming. Some of the attendances that we've seen at the Copa America so far and how many stadiums have been half empty. I mean, from the opening game, Argentina-Canada, like the stadium was pretty much full. But then Peru-Chile, half empty. Ecuador-Venezuela, half empty. Mexico-Jamaica was better, but it wasn't full. USA-Bolivia, half empty. Like, this isn't okay. Uruguay-Panama wasn't anywhere near full. And it's ridiculous. Like, this is a warm-up for a World Cup. And, like, while I'm not going to judge the US team on how they're preparing for that World Cup, I am using this tournament as a marker for what we can expect in terms of events and in terms of crowds and in terms of atmosphere and marketing. And this is ridiculous. And I've had a quick look. I was like, so could I just go to any Copa America game I want? Like, just pick a game and I can go. Yeah, tickets are readily available for literally any game you want to go to. Like Panama v USA, it's in Atlanta. There's loads and loads of tickets left. And the starting price to get in is $75 plus fees. Now, that's not actually horrendous, but that is as cheap as it gets. And I don't understand why. Like, why is that the starting point to get into a game like that, because that is a fantastic opportunity to get kids to buy in. US soccer has never been in a better place to kind of attack the market and make it an even bigger sport than it already is. And I am concerned that they're missing a huge moment here to grow the game. I talked about this on Patreon the other day as well, about the fact that there's a couple of preseason games that I was eyeing in California. And I've actually looked into that in more detail, because Man United play Arsenal in LA at SoFi Stadium. And I was like, I do want to go to that game, right? So I was like, right, let's have a quick look at what that will cost. Jack, a ticket behind the goal, like, pretty similar view probably to what we have at Fulham at the moment, right? $275 each plus fees. Like, what? What are you talking about? Is this a pre-season friendly? You don't know who's playing. You don't know. You're not going to get like amazing like tempo to this game. This is not okay. How could it be $300 to get in to watch a pre-season? So if I was to take the family to watch a pre-season game, it's $1,000. No thanks. I'll see you at SeaWorld. Like, not happening.
About $1,000 to go to SeaWorld as well.
It's better money, better spent. Like, I'm not. I just think it's outrageous. And it's similar, you know, United play Betis in San Diego, pricing for that stupid as well. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of empty seats for all of these games as it stands, and the games are a month away. And whether they reduce pricing before we get there, whether they give more over to the supporters groups to try and sell at a lower price, I don't know what they'll do. But at the moment, soccer, football, whatever, is huge. Never been bigger over there.
Yeah.
And they're just not capitalizing on it because no one can afford to get in. So annoying. It's holding me back from wanting to go to America, mate. That's not good.
No, that isn't good. That isn't good. I mean, we talked about this briefly and about ticket prices on Monday's Postbox, and I got a reply from one of our patrons, Elijah, and I wanted to read it out because I thought it was interesting and some food for thought. He says, I kind of want to address this Copa America ticket pricing situation. I'm not defending the pricing by any stretch. They are expensive, but I think people are thinking that like nosebleed tickets are like $400. Not really the case. We're talking halfway line, two rows up. For that amount of money, I got a ticket for the USA Uruguay game for $180 after all the Ticketmaster fees. So originally $140, 12 rows up from the field next to the USA supporters section. Because Elijah, I think, understands that it's still expensive, but it's not the kind of prices that we're perhaps talking about. He says the ticket gouging wasn't the responsibility of the USSF, but rather the combined efforts of CONMEBOL and Ticketmaster. That being said, I hope some of these prices are better when it's FIFA in charge, although FIFA and money isn't a great combo for the World Cup. Also, most of the games I've seen have had pretty decent attendances, bar the upper bowls. You have to also remember that the USA is huge in comparison to Germany. I have to take a two-hour flight to watch a game of my own country in my own country. This can make it harder for fans to travel, especially fans from rival countries like Argentina, Uruguay, that are literally on the other ends of the hemisphere. I said it was all very fair, and I said also that I appreciate it's a hard balance to strike. If you make all the unsold tickets cheaper close to match day, what's the point in buying them in advance?
Yeah.
But also, surely better to have those seats filled, even at a reduced rate, than empty, both financially and for like the optics of the tournament. I don't really know. This is probably why I don't work in finance, because I don't necessarily understand exactly how this all works. But from a supporter's point of view, I think it remains disappointing.
Yeah, I just think that it's disappointing. I mean, I just don't understand. Like, it's not like, you know, the Panama game, for example, is in Atlanta. It's not like Atlanta can't fill their stadium. It's not like there's loads of people.
No, we see it full quite a lot.
Like, I know that all of those people aren't necessarily USMNT fans, but there must be enough that they can get to the game to fill the stadium for an international match on home soil in a tournament. Like, if it's not the ticket pricing, then I've got even bigger issues with what's going on with them not going to watch their team right now. But that's an even bigger issue if that's the case, if they're not being put off by $100 tickets for basic views. But yeah, it's just something that's been bugging me. And I think it's important that people don't go and pay this silly money for the tickets. Like, okay, $100, that's fine. Like, I appreciate that can be the norm.
So, yeah, I mean, it was £150 or €150 for a lot of the games that I was at the Euros looking for those kind of tickets. So that's similar pricing, right?
And maybe it is Ticketmaster because they're doing these preseason games that I'm talking about as well. And $250 to watch a friendly, that really ain't okay. So I actually do hope those stadiums are empty and that they learn a lesson from it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're right. Well, I think it's probably time that we call it a day there. Next time we record a main podcast on this feed, Dean, you'll be in San Diego and I'll have watched the sunrise at the Stone Circle. We'll be very different people.
Oh, mate, we'll be so mellow and chilled, won't we? It's going to be such a good vibe when we next jump on the mic.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it too, my man. Well, best of luck with the move. I hope that everything goes smoothly and to plan. But all that's left for me to do is to say thank you very much for the last time in London to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. We hope you've enjoyed our little question session around the Copa America and the European Championships. Of course, so much more football to enjoy. We'll be across all of it over here and on our Patreon as well. Make sure you sign up if you're not already. It's two extra podcasts minimum a week, Dean's transfer shows, some bits and bobs talking about the wider things in football as well. I've got a special episode coming out on fan friendships and gemellagios on Friday, which I'm excited to share with everyone. We do our post box there, which will be on Tuesday next week, looking back at all the action that took place over the weekend. But for now, thank you very much for listening and we'll see you very shortly, Rank Squad. Have wonderful weekends. Keep enjoying all of the football and we'll see you very soon. Take it easy, gang. Peace.
Rack up the deals on everything summer at Nordstrom Rack and get brands you love up to 60% off. Vince, Kate Spade New York, Steve Madden, Madewell, Nike, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Just in dresses, tops, shorts, sandals, sneakers, denim, luxury bags, and sunglasses. Rack up the deals today and save up to 60% on summer at your Nordstrom Rack store.
When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.